All right, do you hear me? So this is my topic. The quotation below is from me. It was the opening lines of the short remarks I made at the memorial occasion at Harvard honoring Van. So my story begins in 1903, when Charles Van Hise was chosen as the president of the University of Wisconsin. He was a distinguished geologist. He had been elected to the National Academy of Sciences just before the year before. And the first thing he decided to do as president of Wisconsin was to set up a medical school and to find a dean. He went east to Johns Hopkins. And there he selected Charles Russell Bardeen, whom we see in the, here he is. And Bardeen had been a member of the very first class that graduated from the Johns Hopkins Medical School. So he came to Wisconsin. Over on the right here, we have John Bardeen. At this stage, and then the second thing that President Van Hise did was to appoint my grandfather, Charles Sumner Slichter, to be head of the math department. Now, he was an applied mathematician. His most famous work was actually a paper that dealt with the flow of fluids through amorphous materials. But he was an applied mathematician, and he decided that the University of Wisconsin really needed strength in pure math. And so he went east to do a recruitment, and he selected Edward B. Van Vleck, who is the father of our famous Van. At that time, there weren't many people who had PhDs in the United States in math, but Edward Van Vleck had gotten his PhD in Göttingen, and he was already a member of the National Academy of Sciences, and he came east to came west to the University of Wisconsin. He'd actually been there for several years as a visitor before he was brought back. And Van is his son. We saw this picture earlier. I love this picture. Van. There are lots of stories about Van and railroads. I'm not going to try to tell one of them today. But we also heard that from that wonderful music that we had at the start of this about Van going to his first football game at age 10 with his father, where he heard On Wisconsin played at a football game for the very first time. Van was played flute in the Wisconsin band. And then, of course, he studied at the University of Wisconsin, and he graduated from there. And then he went east to Harvard. Actually, he went there because his father was on a sabbatical leave at Harvard, and Van went along. And this was his thesis advisor. Now, before Kemble was appointed to the faculty at Harvard, there had been a general feeling at Harvard that the idea of having a person who just did pure theory was nonsense. And Percy Bridgman, the great experimental physicist who won the Nobel Prize for his work at high pressure, decided that, in fact, that was very much needed. And so he persuaded Kemble to do a theoretical thesis. And Kemble did. He's the first theoretical physicist that Harvard ever had. He had a son. Kemble had a son and two daughters. I went to school with his son, and in fact, the son was my brother's college roommate. So it's a small world in Cambridge. So in any event, Van was his first student, and as we've heard, he got his PhD after 2 years in 1922, and then he went to Minnesota, and he became a full professor at age 29. And of course, one of the most important things that he did there was to woo Abigail Pearson. And they were married in 1927. When Ann and I got married in 1980, the Van Vlecks came to our wedding, and after the ceremony was over and people were visiting, he and Abigail came up, and he pointed to his necktie, and he said, "This is the tie I wore when we got married." Typical Van Vleck. Well, Van, as we've heard, was really actively involved with the quantum theory. And we heard his thesis was on the quantum theory of the helium atom. But this paper, which I printed out, copied a little bit, notice this is communicated in April 1926 about Heisenberg. 1925 is when Heisenberg's first matrix paper was published. So this is immediately after that Van Vleck is already commenting on a possible alternative set of postulates connected with the matrix mechanics. So this gives you an idea of how much he was right on top of what was happening. So in the fall of 1928, he moved from Minnesota to Madison, and that gave the University of Wisconsin the first theorist who was really at the frontier of the quantum theory. Now, John Bardeen was growing up in Madison. His father was the dean. Incidentally, the medical school has a building, a Bardeen Hall, just as there's a Van Vleck Hall in honoring the mathematician Van Vleck. So John Bardeen was a really bright young man, and he graduated from high school at age 13. His parents decided this was a little too early to enter college, and so he spent two more years at a different high school. He originally went to University High School, and then he went over to Madison Central High, and together with his brother, they studied there. And at age 15, he then entered the University of Wisconsin. He was very interesting. He wanted to join a fraternity. His father wouldn't give him the money to do this. So he played pool for money. And he earned the money to join a fraternity. He also was on the swim team and earned a letter at Wisconsin. And I got this picture from from his son, Bill. And then, of course, in 1928, Van moved to Madison. Here's this picture we saw on the opening slide with the 1928 air conditioning system in action. And on arrival, he gave this one-year course in the quantum theory. And as you saw from that earlier view graph, he was on top of what the real thing. He knew Schrodinger, he knew Heisenberg, he knew the whole works. And so this is Bardeen's first course in quantum theory. And you can imagine what this meant for Bardeen. Now, Bardeen graduated as an undergraduate in 1926, but he was pretty young and he realized he could spend a little more time. And so he stayed on and he got a master's degree. He actually did a thesis with an engineer. But he took this course from Van, and he also took an individual study course with Van. He actually then applied to go to Trinity College in Cambridge to get a fellowship, and Van wrote a wonderful letter. And I have a copy of a letter from the recipient of Van's letter of recommendation, saying that that Van had a European standards, and they should take his letter of recommendation seriously. So, but unfortunately, even that wasn't good enough, so John got turned down. He was always interested in applied things, and he really didn't want to become a professor. So he went to work at the Gulf Oil Research Labs in Pittsburgh, and there he got involved actually in early work on theory of geophysical prospecting. And he did this for several years, and then he decided really he did want to go to graduate school. And he, of course, what he was interested in was the quantum theory and things of that sort. He really knew a tremendous amount of math. The Wisconsin math department, as well as several people in physics, were really highly knowledgeable of math. And so he really thought that he was better qualified to go to graduate school in math than in physics. And he enrolled in the math department at Princeton. But he wanted to do a thesis in physics. So the first day he arrived, why he was sent over to the physics department to make contact with the physicists. And he met the head of the physics department, and that the head said to him that he had a student there who could show him around, and that was Fred Seitz. It's the first student he met there was Fred Seitz. Well, he went to did his thesis, PhD thesis, with Eugene Wigner, and got his PhD in 2 years. Well, Van had been following. By then, Van had moved to Harvard, and Van thought that he would be a wonderful candidate for the Society of Fellows. So he proposed Van proposed John Bardeen to be a junior fellow, and that was very interesting to Bardeen. He had to go up and have an interview. The senior fellows, of course, are very distinguished faculty in all of the different fields of learning. And I don't know how many of you ever met John Bardeen, but John was not a talker. In fact, it was hard to, if you sat next to him at a dinner party, I'm told you, I didn't have that experience because usually a lady's sitting next to him, it was pretty hard to get the conversation going. So evidently this interview didn't do very well, and John Bardeen told me, you know, he said, that interview didn't do very well. He said, I think Van had to go talk to the committee to persuade them that I should come. I happened to talk to Van about this, and Van said, you know, John didn't do very well on that interview. He said, I had to go to them. I think Harvard was pretty glad they made that choice. They gave him an honorary degree in the 70s. They Nobel Prize twice is probably good enough to get a degree. But he was at Harvard for 3 years. And then the tail end of his visit at or the time that he was at Pittsburgh, why, he met a young lady whom he was quite attracted to, and she was attracted to him. And she decided that, you know, over these years he was there at Cambridge, he wasn't making any moves, but he would come down and visit her. He decided she liked him a lot, and she moved up to Boston to sort of speed things up a bit. But John had a very conventional idea that you shouldn't invite someone to marry you unless you had a job. But Van got him this job at Minnesota, and as soon as he got it, why, John proposed to Jane Maxwell, and they got married. Well, in the late 30s, as we've heard, Van had a very close collaboration with Gorder, and these wonderful studies that Gorder was doing of relaxation time of paramagnetic substances. Van wrote a very famous paper on the theory of the spin lattice relaxation in these materials. Here's a copy this from the first page. Van gave me a copy of this paper, which I treasure. And I want you to see several things about it. First of all, look at how he starts this. I don't seem to have a pointer here, but I guess I can use, if I can get this thing off. Oh, here we are, okay. A noteworthy series of experiments. He starts right out saying something really nice. That's Van. How often do you see that? But this is so beautifully written. I really take your time to read the words. So here we are. In solid bodies, the spin and orbit are largely decoupled, and the magnetism results almost entirely from spin. At first sight, it may seem that owing to this decoupling, the spin moment is a constant of the motion, and so does not undergo any of the oscillations prerequisite to absorption or dispersion. So it explains what causes absorption or dispersion. The constancy is, however, spoiled by the spin-spin coupling, i.e. the interaction between the spins of different paramagnetic ions and also by slight potential energy of alignment of spin relative to the crystal lattice arises because the spin is never perfectly decoupled from the orbit and so indirectly feels the influence of the crystalline star effect acting on the orbit. I mean, this is such clear explanation, so physical, so properly ordered. I mean, it's gorgeous writing. Of course, probably they wouldn't allow you to put something written like this in the Physical Review today, certainly not in Phys Rev Letters. So he goes on here, and he explains what the spin lattice relaxation time and the spin-spin time relaxation times. And then we come down here on this last thing. The most elegant way of determining tau is furnished by the thermodynamic treatment of Casimir and Dupré. And this is the use of this concept of spin temperature. Now, lots of people think the spin temperature concept and its utility is something that only arose in connection with magnetic resonance after the war. Well, of course, there was important work that was done on it after the war, but it goes long before that. And of course, originally with adiabatic demagnetization for cooling, but Van used it a great deal. Now, here's another page in that paper. I'm not expecting you to try to read this, but I picked this little figure out. There's a big figure version of this, but it shows that he shows the energy levels of the titanium and the chromium atoms. So he's going to calculate the relaxation time, but he's using a real crystal model. Here are the actual energy levels and the various notations of what these levels are. Now, the relaxation time is an energy exchange, a heat flow, and he gives a general formula here. These are the quantum energy levels, these are transition probabilities, and these are the probabilities of occupations of these states. The states are combined states of the electron and the lattice. And the point I want to bring out here is that with this sort of formula and this heat flow he shows can be written in a form like this, where this is the spin temperature and this is the lattice, and this quantity alpha here tells you how fast the thing is going. And he shows that alpha can be written as what he calls it a spur. This means diagonal sum. So this is a trace or diagonal sum expression. That means, and this is the important thing he says, that the great advantage of writing this is that it is valid in any system of representation, and so it is not necessary to actually find the system which diagonalizes W. So he gives it down here. Now this idea that you work things around to a form where you can calculate them as a trace is something Van uses over and over. And it's the form, it's the basis of the calculation that Nico referred to for the second moment and for the fourth moment. And it's also I copied this from him to calculate the relaxation time of a nucleus in zero magnetic field in a metal when the Hamiltonian is the dipole-dipole system for which no one knows the eigenstates. So this was beautiful. Well, now let's turn to the personal side a bit. Van was my advisor. I tell a little history. I entered Harvard in 1941, and of course, the Pearl Harbor attack was that December. And so by January, the physics department had decided that they could no longer afford having to spend 2 years taking elementary physics, and they collapsed the course into 1 year. And then that summer, we all went to summer school, or a lot of us did. And so in the summer school, we took the electricity and magnetism course, which was a full-year course compacted into the summer, and that was what we usually would have taken as juniors. And then in the sophomore year, I took a whole bunch of electricity and magnetism courses and electronics courses. So I at the end of my sophomore year, I studied all the electronics Harvard had to offer. Now, I realized at that point that the war on, I thought I should leave college and do some, then I asked, went to Van. I was working for him grading lab reports in the course I'd taken that summer because all the graduate assistants had left. So they took those of us who just had the course and hired us to be the graders. In any event, I went to Van and asked him, should I enlist and should I try to get in the Signal Corps or something like that, where they'd use the fact that I'd had all this electronics. And he said, well, no, actually, there's a war project that Bright Wilson was running. Bright Wilson's the father of the physicist Ken Wilson, incidentally. So I went and I had an interview. Now, you understand, I just turned 19. I'm basically a sophomore. And I didn't hear anything after the interview. And so Van stopped me in the hall one day and said, well, what happened? I said, well, I guess he's probably found someone else. I haven't heard anything. The next day, Bright Wilson called me. So my guess is Van got on the phone to him. Well, I worked there at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution for 2.5 years on this war project of studying underwater explosives. And then the war ended, of course, in August. That was too fast for me to get back to college. So I came back to enter in spring of 1946. And the reason I'm telling about this is Van said to me, there are a lot of courses at Harvard that start in the fall and then they continue in the spring. And I hadn't heard the first half. And I was trying to find something I could get into. And Van said, well, I'm teaching my course in mechanics. And you can come in with the second half. He said, but what you need to do is get the textbook. And he told me what it was. And he told me what chapters we were going to have that they were going to teach in the first half. He said, do the homework problems at the end of these things. And then he said, and here's my review questions. And he handed me this paper. And this is what Van did in all his courses. He had a sort of review questions for all the students, which he handed out before the exam. Now, if you knew how to do those review questions, actually, you knew how to do most of the exam. So it was kind of, it sort of guaranteed you that you were going to pass his exam, is the way I'd phrase it. And that was very much his style. So I entered Harvard. And then in the winter, he stopped me in the hall and suggested that I should do my thesis with Purcell. And so there are Pound, Torrey, and Purcell, who had discovered nuclear magnetic resonance. And I started working with Van. I did an electron spin resonance thesis. And I was the only one who was doing these things. This is just a picture of the apparatus. I did the first experiments to measure spin lattice relaxation times in paramagnetic salts using magnetic resonance. Well, I got my PhD in 1949 and went out to the University of Illinois. 2 years later, John Bardeen got fed up with Bell Labs, and Fred Seitz, who was at Illinois, who knew John from Princeton, invited him to come, and we succeeded in getting him to come. And then, of course, Chun Ling got his PhD and went out to Oklahoma and then came back to Wisconsin. In 1956, my student and I did our experiment on a superconducting the T1 and superconductors. In 1957, Bardeen, Cooper, and Schrieffer figured out the theory, and which we could then apply to our data. So I didn't put this on the thing here. And then, of course, in 68, Chun Ling moved to Madison. And I love this. He reminded me when we were talking about this of this wonderful symposium that took place out in Norman, Oklahoma. Here's Van Vleck. Did Van suggest who was going to lecture Or did you suggest it?
He suggested.
Okay, so here we are. He gave the first talk, and I was invited to give this one. Al Clarkson gave one on these, and of course, and Felix Bloch. So this was a wonderful occasion. Well, in 67, Van received the Medal of Science. And then in 1977, I got this letter. Now, I copied this for you here with the, so you can see his handwriting. Some of you didn't take a course from him. This is the sort of handwriting he used to write his lecture notes as he was lecturing. And it's pretty hard to read. I mean, it's cursive, which I like to call cursed writing. And what he's writing me about is this. He's suggesting that the Holland Society of New York, an ancestor worshiping society for which membership requires a male ancestor in New York while it was still New Amsterdam, and they award their medal. They're going to award a medal in 1978, and he wants this medal to be given to Goudsmit and Uhlenbeck. And he wanted to, at that time I was the chairman of this committee that recommends who should get the National Medal of Science. And I had told him earlier that Goudsmit and Uhlenbeck had, I guess that Goudsmit had been proposed for this, but hadn't received it. And he wanted to know whether he could use this information. And so I wrote back to him. Sorry, making these noises. I wrote back to him. Now, this is probably too small for you to read, but I wrote, I'm always surprised at the large number of physicists who are under the distinct impression that Goudsmit and Uhlenbeck, in fact, did receive the Nobel Prize. It's certainly hard to think of a concept which has been more all-pervasive in modern-day physics than the concept of spin. Besides, think of all of us who earn our living solely on that idea. Well, he wanted to use this in his proposal, and then he wanted to find out how he should describe me. Actually, at that time, I had been appointed to the Harvard Corporation. He wanted to use that, and I didn't think that was a good idea. The important point about this letter is this is the day I got it, October 11th. Well, October 11th is the day he got the Nobel Prize. And this just illustrates to me so much who Van was. He was busy trying to get an honor for Goudsmit and Uhlenbeck. He wasn't thinking about himself here. And this is the day he got the Nobel Prize. And here's this, the photographer caught him early in the morning receiving congratulations. I love this statement that he says, I thought I might be ruled out by the statute of limitations. And here he is at the ceremony. We saw that before. And Chun Lin, in his remarks at the Madison exercises, made this wonderful statement that Van was well known for making remarks with a special touch for just about any occasion. So I'd like to close with this thing that Van wrote about rivalry among scientists. There are three Dutch physicists, Gorter, Kramers, and Kroening, whose research interests have often been unusually close to my own. Consequently, we often duplicated each other in the results of our investigations, sometimes published independently, sometimes unpublished to avoid duplication. I cannot emphasize too strongly that it was never a case of cutthroat competition, such as is described in Watson's book, Double Helix, the race to find the structure of the DNA molecule, but rather an unavoidable overlap when we were thinking along similar lines. And then I love this final sentence. In the case of Gorter, however, our results were more apt to be in series than in parallel, as he was also an experimenter, whereas I am a mere theorist. Wow. Thank you.
I've heard several references about his interest in trains. I know he kept railroad timetables. I myself never saw that up close, but do you have any remarks to make about his fondness for trains and timetables and things like that?
Actually,
You heard it by hearsay. Good hearsay.
Let me say this. He was famous for having detailed knowledge of these, but I think I want to ask Chun Lin if he would tell a little bit about what Van said to him about getting to Oklahoma and so on.
Yes, he planned the entire trip for me when I went to Oklahoma for interview. We by train from Boston to New York, and then by train from New York to Chicago and Chicago to Norman. There's a choice between, I think, New York Central and another train between New York and Chicago. So I asked him which one. He said that the New York Central one served better ice cream. And then one time I visit him, I think I arrived maybe in the middle of the week, and I was to leave at the end of the week. And he asked me, we talk about the train. I was taking the train back to New York, and he said that, well, your train leaves at 4:23. I said, ha-ha, the old man made a mistake. So I told him that, no, it's 4:25. He said, yes, but it was changed just yesterday.
Just one comment. When Charlie, when you said that Van had the first theory of spin lattice relaxation, it actually wasn't the first, because Ivar Vahler had proposed one back in the late 20s, and it involved a modulation of the dipole-dipole interactions by phonons.
No. And yes.
It was,
no,
of course,
I know that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It
absolutely
was, of course, not big enough to do it. It didn't give the right magnitude. But it was an interesting connection. Ivar Vahler was very high up in the Nobel Committee, and when the Nobel Prize was awarded in 1970, Vahler had been around at Brookhaven. He liked to go for long walks everywhere. And a few of us were very perturbed that in that Nobel Prize, which was given to Nael for antiferromagnetism, that Van was left out. And I wouldn't call it complained exactly, but petitioned that a reconsideration be given for Van. And I don't know whether that had any effect, but I would certainly hope so. Ray Orbach and I had done this and spoken to them. So I might also mention an experience like Chun Lin's with trains. In 1959, just after I finished my thesis, and Van and Harvey Brooks and Vic Jones, as the experimenter, were on my committee. And first of all, Van and Harvey Brooks got into an argument with one another. And Vic Jones was sitting behind them. And I raised my hand as if to say something, and Vic Jones went like this. So I shut up, and it took, you know, an appreciable amount of time before it finally broke up, and then they got back to me. But I had a reprise. Finally, right after that, my wife and I had both gotten Fulbrights to go to Japan, and mine was, I know, ministered to by Van. And he had arranged for me to be in the laboratory of Professor Kotani, but to work with Professor Kubo, who would be the perfect person for me. And that's how it turned out. And then he took it upon himself to arrange our transportation across the country, because we were going by train. And we were going down to New York to leave a lot of stuff with our families, and then went on the 20th Century Limited to Chicago that had better ice cream, I guess. And from Chicago, he said, you have to take the Empire Builder, which goes up through Minneapolis and across the north. And he said, check with them to see if they still have those birch bark crackers, as he called them, on the way. So that got us there. I don't think they had those crackers anymore. They might have had them only for one day, and he didn't check the day before in that case. So he was a wonderful person, really. I think every one of us were very happy. I think Dave Huber will remember that when Van got the Nobel Prize, Peter Levy, who had been his student, wanted to have a dinner for Van at the Levy's house. And I argued with him because I said that he and his wife would just be serving and wouldn't have a chance to talk about it. And so we arranged for a dinner at the Princeton Club, where Van was staying at the Harvard Club around the corner from it in New York. And we had the most marvelous time at that. I think it was a love fest. It was all of his boys. There were no girls at that time. Of the 50s and 60s were there. Ray Orbach couldn't come because he was in Europe, but sent a telegram. And it was just a love fest. Van was so happy with this. And Abigail was very happy, too. And we had a lot of laughter and a wonderful time. Dave will remember it.
Any other questions?